Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled, To Be a Blessing to the World, by Lama Kathy Wesley. In observance of the start of construction of the new Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Dharma Center, Lama Kathy reflects on the role of blessing in Buddhism, and how places, things, and even people like us can be a source of immense goodness in the world merely by being present in it. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
So, hi, good afternoon. Welcome to the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling 1 p.m. Dharma Talk. And today's topic is to be of blessing to the world. Part of the reason that I wanted to talk about that this particular week is because this was the week when the Columbus KTC started its reconstruction project. We were able to get the bulldozers rolling on our tiny little postage stamp of a property in East Franklinton. The bulldozers were delivered on Tuesday in the morning, and by Tuesday afternoon, they were scraping dirt. And then on Wednesday, I got to go down to the center site with Kim Miracle, our KTC director, and we had just a lovely visit, meeting the superintendent, Danny, and getting a look at our future home. So I just want to thank everybody who got us to this place. It's been 4.5 years of fundraising, pretty much continuous fundraising and planning and so forth. But I'm happy to tell you that today that we are underway. And as a matter of fact, I looked up on the complete Tibetan calendar. I looked up the astrological aspects for Tuesday afternoon, and the aspect was favorable. The elemental combination was fire and fire. And in the Tibetan horoscope that I read, it said it's especially good for creating structures and creating harmony among people. So I think the aspects are good. And I think that we have a good potential. At least our baby had a good birthday horoscope. So we'll see how things go, and I invite everybody to continue your prayers for the KTC, because I'm pretty convinced that it is the prayers of all of you that have helped support us and brought us this far. And so, you know, just thanks to all of you for this. And part of the reason I wanted to give this talk was because we started on the building this week, and because a lot of people have told me that the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling has been a source of blessing in their life. And because it's been a source of blessing in their life, I want to talk about how places and people and things can become sources of blessing in the life of all beings. So that's what I'm going to be talking about today. I'm going to start with a short Buddhist prayer, after which the talk will begin. I'm going to recite the four-line refuge prayer in Tibetan. And if this is a prayer with which you are familiar, you can join in. And if it's a prayer with which you are unfamiliar, you can join in your heart and in your mind that you dedicate this particular session of teaching and practice to the benefit of all sentient beings. Oh, Sanje Chudon Sochi Chonam La. Jang chu pardu dani kyapsu chi. Da ji jin so ji pe su nam ki. Dro la pen shu san je dru par sho. To the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, I take refuge until enlightenment is reached. Through the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. So that's a way to start. Oh, one more prayer. Sorry. Prayers to the gurus of the lineage. Oh, Palden Sawe Lama Rinpoche Tagi Chiwor Pede Denshula Kadrin Jembo Kone Che Sun Te Kusun Tugging a Drup Sal Du Sol. Okay, thanks. A lot of people have asked me over the years what the Buddhist idea is about blessing. You know, what is blessing? What is the source of blessing? How does blessing work? And I thought it would be good to talk about that a little bit today. A lot of us have, I guess you could say we have felt a blessing before we have even understood what a blessing is. I think a lot of us have felt blessing, even though we may not intellectually grasp what a blessing is. So we feel it first. We feel it before we understand it. It's for a lot of people, it's a feeling of deep peace when they encounter a specific person, or deep peace when they visit a specific locality. It could be a sense of being at home, being at rest, at peace, and having some inner stability. And all of these feelings come from within our mind. And you could actually say, in some ways, that blessing is like a reverberation, like a resonance of goodness. And why do we feel this deep peace when we are with special individuals or in special places? Why do we feel that? I think that in my view, as a Buddhist, I think that this happens because it's our nature. It is our basic nature. Our basic nature is goodness. I know in the Buddhist teachings, they call our mind's basic nature basic goodness. They call it Buddha nature, and so on. And I guess you could say that we respond to and feel happy in the presence of goodness, whether it's something we see on television, whether it's something that we see in person, whether it's an individual we encounter, we can feel something in their presence, and it resonates with the goodness that's within us. And in fact, often when I've explained a blessing as to why reciting mantras like the compassion mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, why reciting a mantra or being in a holy place where great beings have meditated in the past. A lot of people say they feel this when they go to our home, monastery, Karma Triana Dharma Chakra. And when we feel that, when we go to such a place, we feel almost the reverberation of all of the meditation that's been done in that place. And so the analogy that I've used for this in the past is the analogy of the tuning fork. And those of you who know music have seen and even heard tuning forks. They're generally used to tune instruments. They're created from metal, and this metal has the properties of resonance, so that when you strike one of these tuning forks on a hard surface, it will reverberate with a pure tone. It can be any note on the scale, C, B, D, F, G, A, B, C, right? It could be any of the musical notes on the scale. And what's unique about these is that when you strike one and it reverberates with that tone, you could hold another tuning fork, a separate one, tuned to the same note. And without even touching, the reverberation of this tuning fork will make this tuning fork vibrate. And this is sometimes called sympathetic vibration in science and music. The idea is that when something is tuned to one particular note, we'll call it A, then when you hold the other tuning fork right next to it, it begins to resonate in response. And so kind of what I'm thinking is that for us, when our basic nature, our mind's basic nature, which is goodness, contacts or comes close to something that also has the basic nature of goodness, then something resonates within us. And that resonance, that feeling of resonance, in a way, that is what blessing is. Blessing is feeling that resonance of our goodness with the goodness that is we're in the presence of. And a number of years ago, when I visited a teaching at our home monastery at Karma Triana Dharma Chakra in Woodstock, New York, this was many years ago, when I visited KTD Monastery and I attended a teaching by the previous Kalu Rinpoche. He gave a teaching about blessing. And he said that from his point of view, the analogy that he used was the analogy of the radio or television tower that's sitting on a high hill or a high mountain. He said that that antenna that is on top of the mountain is giving out a signal. And if we have our sets tuned to that signal, we will get either the audio or the video of that signal. We will get that signal. And he said, so for us, he said, when we turn our minds in prayer and devotion toward the masters of the lineage, toward the Buddha, toward the bodhisattvas, toward holy beings, when we turn our mind in devotion toward them, he said they are like that television tower or the radio tower on the hill that is always broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, broadcasting love, compassion, and wisdom. And if we set our, if we tune our sets to that frequency, we will get that blessing. And so in that way, blessing had two parts. It is the continuous giving and the continuous, I guess for lack of a better word, broadcasting of love, compassion, and wisdom by the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the enlightened beings. And then our turning toward them in prayer and devotion and receiving their blessing by receiving that reverberation of their goodness within us. And so you could say then that blessing has these two parts. And so what this means then, this means number one, that enlightenment is not some sort of static state. I know a lot of folks probably think of enlightenment as being passive, just resting in peace, you know, resting in peace and resting in wisdom and not doing anything, having no dynamism, no dynamic to it. But it appears, based on Kalu Rinpoche's description, that the state of enlightenment is actually a dynamic state. And it is a state in which all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are continuously sending out love, compassion, radiating love, compassion, and wisdom continuously. And that if we open ourselves to that love, compassion, and wisdom, we will get that picture. So anyways, that's something that we can think about. Because then, whether we're talking about the sound, the reverberation of a pure tone, as we are with the tuning fork analogy, or if we're talking about tuning ourselves to the same frequency of love, compassion, and wisdom as the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in the radio and TV tower analogy, whatever it is, it requires some accessibility on our part. We have to be tuned to that frequency to get that picture. And so how accessible is the blessing? How accessible is the blessing to us? Can it access us? Can we access the blessing? And for many of us, it's a little bit difficult because we have, Kalu Rinpoche said this when he was giving this analogy of the TV tower. He said, we may or may not be open to the blessings of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas because our mind is clouded by the what are called the four veils of obscuration and obstacle. For example, he said, we have basic ignorance. We don't even know that we have Buddha nature. And because we don't know that we have Buddha nature, we're not even thinking about receiving a blessing from anybody. So we have basic ignorance. Then secondarily, we have the habitual tendency, the veil of habitual tendencies, which when we experience our own mind and all of its brilliance and all of its vastness, we make a mistake about it. And the mistake we've been making is a habitual one we have made forever and ever. Number one, we don't recognize the nature of our mind as vast, limitless, and luminous. Instead, through habitual tendency, we think of the mind's vastness as a self and mind's luminosity or radiance as an external world of others. And so by habitual tendency, we mistake our Buddha nature to be self and other. And then once we have this duality, we then act as though we're living in a dualistic world in which we really exist and things really exist and we have to get things or get away from things. And so this third veil of mental afflictions arises from our habitual tendency to grasp at a self. And then finally, we take action on our negative mental afflictions. And this creates the last of the four veils, the veil of karmic accumulation. So what we have is we have these veils of obstacle and obscuration covering our capacity to receive the blessings of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And so as a result, we can't feel the blessing. We can't access the blessing or the reverberation. We just can't. And so as a result, we have to then take action to begin to dispel our obstacles and obscurations. This is the function of our practice in Buddhism and in Dharma and in spirituality of all types, is to remove those veils of obstacle and obscuration from our experience of our mind so that we can receive and feel the blessing of the enlightened ones. Now, Kala Rinpoche in his teaching also said, ultimately, the nature of our mind is Buddha. Okay? The nature of our mind is Buddha. The nature of our mind is enlightened. But because our enlightenment has not been actualized, at first, we can only relate to enlightenment as we perceive it to exist in other beings and other places. So at the beginning of our spiritual path, we have to relate. We can't relate to the Buddha that our mind is because it's not completely realized yet. We have to relate to enlightenment as we imagine it to be exterior to us. And so this is why at the beginning of our Buddhist path, we take refuge in the Buddha as our teacher and his teaching as our path and his community of practitioners as our community. And so as a result of taking the Buddha external to us, taking refuge in that Buddha first, gradually we come into the presence of that Buddha that we perceive to be external to us. And then through our relationship with the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, these three sources of refuge, by our relationship with them, slowly we remove and dispel our obstacles and obscurations so that our own Buddha nature is more present for us and more plainly seen. And how do we open ourselves in this way? How do we dispel these obstacles and obscurations? Well, refuge is the beginning, taking refuge in enlightened beings, meaning having the sense that enlightenment is a real state of dynamism, a real state that has the potential to give us blessing. By seeing the enlightenment as being a real possibility in other beings and also for us, that it's a real possibility for us. That's first. And then secondarily, we do the practices in which we emulate the behavior of enlightened beings. We see images of the Buddha Shakyamuni sitting in quiet repose in meditation. So we undertake the practice of meditation ourselves. We do our best. We sit on our meditation seats and we sit in meditation posture, and we attend to our breath as it comes in and goes out in the practice of meditation. And so we emulate the Buddha by practicing attention to our breathing, or practicing attention to the sound of a mantra, such as the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum, by being attentive to breath awareness, by being attentive to mind's awareness, by being attentive to compassion or to mantra. All of these forms of meditation, this helps us to allow our mind to come to rest. And when we allow our mind to come to rest, the chatter of mental affliction, the chatter of our obscurations and our confusion and delusion, the chatter begins to quiet down, become a slower and softer and slower and softer. And in so doing, we settle. Our minds begin to actually settle. And when our minds actually begin to settle, those of you who saw Mingyur Rinpoche's teaching this morning, he spoke about the gap between thoughts. When one thought has ended before the next has begun, there's an open space, an open gap. And it is that gap, he said, that helps us to understand our Buddha nature. And so if we first quiet down the chatter of our obstacles and obscurations through meditation and mindfulness, and then secondly, we begin to cultivate and emulate the activities of awakened beings, we begin to develop an appreciation for goodness in the world. We begin to appreciate the presence of goodness in the world. And we begin to ourselves begin to cultivate feelings of goodness, feelings of virtue. For example, when we practice Buddhist meditation, we begin with a refuge prayer, as we did today. And in so doing, we turn our minds toward awakening and turn our minds toward the potential, our Buddha potential. And so turning toward that, we create what one of my teachers called it, like an atmosphere of goodness. We develop an atmosphere of goodness in our mind. And when we practice mantra meditation, we create an atmosphere of goodness in our mind. When we do the compassion meditation, Tong Len, T-O-N-G is the Tibetan word for sending, and Len, L-E-N, is the word for taking, Tong Len. When we practice Tong Len, we imagine sending goodness out with the breath, on the out-breath, and we imagine removing suffering from beings on the in-breath. And in this way, we practice feeling love on the out-breath and feeling compassion on the in-breath. And we develop an appreciation for the virtue of love and the virtue of compassion. We can also begin to relate to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the enlightened beings that we perceive as being separate from us, through the use of devotion and offering. So as you can see, the shrines have offerings. In the traditional Buddhist shrine, you'll see sometimes there'll be seven bowls of different objects, flowers, incense, lamps, perfume, food, music, all of those things. Other shrines will just be seven bowls of water, which, since water is sort of pure and water is can be imagined to be anything, it has a lot of positive connotations for us. So even making an offering of a single bowl of water or a single lamp or a single stick of incense in front of an image of the Buddha or in front of Dharma books and this sort of thing, by making these offerings, the books and the statues may not say thank you. the books and the statues may not respond, at least not in the way we can recognize, but we ourselves will respond. Within us, the joy of being close to that which symbolizes our own awakening will begin to that process of the resonance, of the sympathetic resonance of the virtue that is exterior and the virtue that's within. So we create a shrine, we interact with it, we study our Dharma books, we study our Dharma books, we make aspirations. We might think such things as, may all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they have happiness and the causes of happiness. May they have that great happiness, which is freedom from suffering. May they dwell in great equanimity, free of attachment and aversion to those near and far. Those are the four immeasurable meditations. And so by thinking in these, thinking along these lines, we make aspirations. Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, our teacher and the founder of the Columbus KTC, used to say that one of the most powerful aspirations we could make is simply the aspiration, may I be of benefit to all sentient beings. May all sentient beings be happy, and may I be of benefit to all sentient beings. And in fact, the previous Kala Rinpoche had a set of aspirations that he supposedly made every day. And among these were, may everyone who is connected with me by seeing me, by hearing my name, by making offerings to me or service to me, may all of those beings connected to me in any way, even if all they're doing is like remembering me or thinking of me and remembering me. By thinking of me and remembering me, may they benefit. May they benefit from thinking of me and remembering me. And I think that's a very powerful aspiration. And in fact, Kempo Rinpoche said that when you make that aspiration, it starts what he calls a momentum of goodness. It starts a momentum of goodness that's within you that eventually becomes self-sustaining. He says it starts out being somewhat artificial because you're artificially thinking, may I be of benefit to beings. But eventually it becomes how we usually think, how we think in most situations. And so as a result, these aspirations that we make eventually come true. I remember that being asked by one of the Dharma students one time about one line in the seven branch prayer. Those of you who are familiar with the book, The Great Path of Awakening, which we just finished studying in our KTC summer book study, there's the very, very last line in the seven branch prayer says, may whatever merit I have accumulated become a seed for the enlightenment of all beings. Without delay, may I become a splendid leader for sentient beings. This question was asked to me, well, isn't that a little bit self-centered? Thinking, may I myself lead sentient beings? And Situ Rinpoche answered this question in once by saying that when we make the bodhisattva, bodhi means awakening and sattva means mind. So when we generate the mind of awakening and become a bodhisattva in training, when we become a bodhisattva in training, he said, there's a saying in Tibetan culture, when you make an aspiration, a spiritual aspiration, don't worry about practicality. He said, aim high. And so what if we ended up being the only Buddhist in the universe? Then we would definitely want to become a splendid leader for sentient beings. And so may we become the kind of person who could lead others spiritually and help others spiritually. So by making this aspiration, we're not increasing our ego fixation as much as we are expanding the number of beings that we want to help. We want to help as many beings as possible. And we want to be able to lead them into the Dharma. So this is the these are the two ways that a person can open themselves to blessing. First, they can quiet the chatter in their minds, and they can quiet their obstacles and obscuration through the practice of mindfulness. Second, they can cultivate an appreciation for goodness by attempting to do as much virtue as possible, and by taking on and emulating the behavior of awakened beings, meditating, making offerings, and making the aspiration to be of benefit to all beings. There's another thing that we can do as part of this this practice to receive blessing, and that is to purify our obstacles and obscurations through abstaining from negative mental afflictions whenever possible, abstaining from harming others, abstaining from harming ourselves as much as possible. So if we abstain from non-virtue, and we confess the non-virtue that we have accomplished, that we have done in front of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, we can then experience the blessing of having those negative mental afflictions removed. And this comes to us through also, once again, the teachings of the Bodhisattva path. And in the Great Path of Awakening, Jamgon Kantrel the Great, a 19th century Buddhist master from Tibet, said that if we practice what are called the four powers of confession, by practicing these four powers of confession, we can counteract the non-virtue that we have accumulated and actually remove it from our mind stream. This is another way of talking about the Buddhist teaching on karma, action, cause, and effect. It's said that when we think, say, and do things with intention, it plants what is called in Buddhist philosophy, it's called a karmic seed. And this karmic seed contains within it the result with which, if we harm others and perform non-virtue, that seed will blossom as suffering for us in this life. And if we do something that is virtuous and beneficial to self and others, it's like planting a seed of virtue that will come to fruition as happiness. And in this way, the Buddha taught that each person has within them the potential to cultivate happiness through doing virtue, and to create suffering and cultivate suffering through the planting of harm and difficulty. So in this way, we can actually, we're seen as planting positive seeds and negative seeds. And how do we keep these, how do we work with these seeds? The positive seeds we can rejoice in and say, we're glad we did this wonderful, virtuous thing. And may we do more of it. We dedicate it to the benefit of all sentient beings. And the negative things, we can then use the four powers of confession. The power of reliance means that we rely on the Buddha as the witness for our confession. The power of regret is that we regret the wrong that we have done. And the third is that we undertake the practice of confession itself as the remedy for what we have done. And then finally, the resolution. At the conclusion of our confession, we resolve not to repeat the negative action again. And according to the teachings of the Dharma, because we placed that negative karmic seed, we ourselves can uproot it by relying on the Buddha as the witness for our confession, confessing the fault through regret, remedying it through the practice of confession as a whole, and then resolving not to repeat those actions. And so we have also now another way of removing obstacles and obscurations. We can remove those obstacles and obscurations through the practice of confession. So if we practice mindfulness to quiet the chatter of obstacles and obscurations, if we cultivate an appreciation for virtue, open ourselves to a blessing from Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And if we confess our faults, then and gradually do less non-virtuous things, then once again, we open ourselves to blessing. So all of these things have an impact. All of these things have an impact on us because of the truth of the Buddhist teaching on interdependence. Everything we do brings about a result, and everything in this universe is interdependent. And so because of interdependence, I'm interdependent on other beings, and other beings are interdependent on other beings. And in fact, I remember the Vietnamese Zen master, Thich Nhat Hanh, he likes to say we're interdependent, there's interbeing. You know, we all rely upon one another. And so when we purify our negativities and accumulate merit, we open ourselves up and give access to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas' blessing. And so because of this, we eventually ourselves can become sources of blessing for other people. And this can be in ways small and large. I remember when we first graduated from the first three-year retreat that Kempo Carter Rinpoche conducted at Carme Ling Three-Year Retreat Center, also in upstate New York, in the small township of Delhi, New York. When we first graduated, Kempo Carter Rinpoche gave us a little talk. He said, traditionally in Tibet, when a person graduates from the three-year retreat, they are given the title of Lama. And La means superior, and Ma literally means mother. So a person can become a superior parent for sentient beings, a guide for sentient beings. And he said, now, what does Lama mean beyond the word? You know, what does it mean to be a Lama? And he said, it means that from now until you die, you have one function and one function only. And that is to connect everyone you meet with the Dharma. That is your function. You have no other function. That is the function. And then he said, we accomplish this benefit for beings, and we connect beings to the Dharma by ourselves maintaining a Dharma practice, and ourselves maintaining a meditation practice, a Dharma practice, and maintaining all of the practices, or as many of them as we can, from our retreat, and also strengthening our bodhisattva commitment to helping other beings, and so on. As an outward sign of this function, he gave us our first set of Buddhist robes, of teaching robes. The first teaching robe had the skirt, and Kempo Rinpoche made the very first of our skirts himself on his own sewing machine. And then a local seamstress made us our first yellow Dharma shirts. And he gave us, we started out with burgundy shawls, and a few years ago, he gave us the change that we changed from burgundy shawls to the white shawl that was worn by Milarepa, the great master of the Kagyu tradition. And he said, you wear these robes when you are teaching. The monastics wear their robes all the time as an outward sign of their taking the vows of monasticism. But the lamas, the teachers who are lay people, were instructed to only wear the robes when they were representing Buddhism and the teachings. And he said, whether you wear the robes for teaching or whether you wear the robes because you're a monastic, he said, this outward sign of your robes he said, actually is part of your benefit for beings. And this, of course, sounds a little curious. But he said, if a person anywhere sees you in your robes and they have a positive connotation for that, they have a positive feeling, they are, he says, if it makes them happy, even if they don't know why they're happy and they see you and they feel delight, he said, that is an accumulation of merit for them. This is an accumulation of virtue. It's a cultivation of a virtuous mind state for them. And so, wow, that was quite a thought. And so it made me really aware that even those of us who have not done 3-year retreat, even those of us who have merely taken the vow of refuge, taken the Buddha as our teacher, the Dharma as our path, the Sangha as our community, also those who have taken the lay precepts of not killing, not stealing, not lying, not committing sexual misconduct, and not taking intoxicants, people who have taken any one of the five lay precepts, we can represent a source of blessing for other people by our keeping of those vows. And if we've taken the Bodhisattva vow, we can be a blessing to people just by connecting to our Bodhisattva vow, wishing for their benefit. Kempo Carter Rinpoche said, once a person has taken the Bodhisattva vow, all of their relationships become more meaningful because we have sworn to liberate all beings from samsara. And so having made the aspiration, even if we can't carry it out, that it actually, he says, it makes our relationships with others more meaningful. And so taking refuge, taking precepts, taking the Bodhisattva vow, receiving Vajrayana empowerment, receiving the blessings of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas as given by the teacher, and Vajrayana empowerment when we receive the Chenrezig empowerment or the Tara empowerment. All of these things increase our potential to be a source of blessing for others. And eventually, these blessings can bring about the condition for our own awakening. So praying to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, receiving the blessing of the teachers, studying the Dharma, making offerings, making the silent aspiration to be a benefit to others. All of this affects us. It dispels our obstacles and obscurations, allows us to receive the resonant blessings of the enlightened ones, and helps us to slowly, completely dispel our obstacles and obscurations, which then brings about the state of a Buddhahood or enlightenment for us. And so that's a little bit about how we, even as ordinary beings, can become a source of blessing for others. I know it might be mind-blowing, but if we have Buddha nature, and we maybe have Buddha nature, but maybe we have developed the habit of not thinking well of ourselves, thinking badly of ourselves, if we can keep that wish alive to be a benefit to others, then slowly we will actually become beneficial to others. And we can actually benefit and bless people just by being in their presence. Many of us wear amulets with relic pills in them. And so that's a source of benefit for others. Many of us will have and turn the prayer wheel, and that's the source of benefit for others. Many of us will hang prayer flags, and that will become a source of blessing for others. Maybe you're a practitioner of mind training or Lojong, and you're doing Tonglen for others. Maybe as part of your mind training practice, you put a single stick of incense outside every day, making the offering to all beings of the six realms, enlightened ones, and so on. So there's ways that we can bless the environment just through our practice. It's not that we're a big deal. That's not it at all. It's that Dharma is a big deal. And if we enact Dharma, then we can help others this way. And now to sort of conclude the conversation of blessing, when we think about places, creating places of blessing, I think, of course, because this week I've really had Columbus Karma Take Some Choling, KTC. I've had KTC on the brain all week, seeing the pictures of the bulldozers opening the ground and going back and watching the videos and seeing the pictures from the land blessing last year where we blessed and consecrated the land and made offerings to the local spirits saying, we're sorry to be disturbing your ground and taking your trees. Oh, we're so sorry. We will give you something beautiful in return. And thinking about this, I think about the KTC, whether the KTC is in somebody's home, whether the KTC is in a rented place, or whether the KTC is in a freestanding building, wherever the Karma Take Some Choling is located in your community or in your state or whatever, it is a source of blessing. And I was reminded of this when we received a fantastic gift. A donor provided the KTC with a full set of Buddhist scriptures. This is dozens and dozens and dozens of volumes of Buddhist scripture and Buddhist commentary. In Tibetan, it's called the Kangjur, which you might spell K-A-N-G-Y-U-R, Kangjur or Kangjur, and then Tenjur, T-E-N-G-Y-U-R, Kangjur and Tenjur. Kangjur is like the words of the Buddha, the scriptures. Tenjur are the commentaries and so on. We had a full set of these given to our center. And this was when we were in the old building at the corner of Rich and Grub Streets, the church that burned down in 2016. And I remember talking to Lama Wangdu, who lives locally, and he was telling me the story. He said when he was a young person living in Nepal, he said that the people of the village experienced some agricultural problems. In other words, their crops did not thrive in one particular year. So the lamas encouraged them to go to their shrine, to their community shrine, and take every volume of the Kangjur and Tenjur and to walk in a procession around the fields. And by walking around the fields, they would circumambulate the fields carrying the Buddhist scriptures on their shoulders. And Lama Wangdu said, everybody dressed up. They all dressed up in their best clothes and held the white ceremonial kata, the silk scarf. And they carried these with great devotion and respect. And they took them around. And so that's what we did. We weren't all dressed up, but we did have katas, and we took the Kangjur and Tenjur and walked around our building, and then took the Kangjur and Tenjur inside our temple and put it on our shrine. And later, the Lama said, he said that his feeling was that a lot of the good things that happened to our city, the city experienced great economic times, good economic times. Business was good, lots of construction was good, and so on. And he said, well, the reason for this obviously is because we have the Kangjur and Tenjur in downtown Columbus, and we were making offerings in front of them and so forth and so on. And so I have this idea in my mind that when we get ready to install the new set of Kangjur and Tenjur that we are being given by a wonderful benefactor, is giving us a new set of Kangjur and Tenjur. And we're so excited about this. And so I'm wondering if maybe before we install it, we should put it in a panel van and drive it all the way around the city of Columbus on our outer belt, you know, take a circumambulation of the city of Columbus on Interstate 270. I'm thinking about this. This could actually happen. So to bless the city, but whether we believe in circumnavigating the city in a panel van with scriptures, or whether we think about putting these scriptures in a shrine, making offerings to them, and honoring them, whatever way we look at this, when we develop and cultivate virtuous mind states, when we cultivate those virtuous mind states, we remove and dispel obstacles and obscurations to receiving the blessings of the awakened ones. And in that way, we gradually can improve. And by improving and removing our obstacles and obscurations, we eventually could ourselves attain Buddhahood. And attaining Buddhahood then, because we've taken the Bodhisattva vow, we would then be objects of help and benefit to other beings. So it's my hope that that by talking about this today, that I have given you a little bit of encouragement, because sometimes we need encouragement. Sometimes we feel discouraged about, oh, maybe I don't have Buddha nature. Maybe there was some kind of mistake and I don't have Buddha nature. But the fact of the matter is every being that has a mind has Buddha nature. And as a result, we have the potential to awaken and benefit others in vast and amazing ways. So it's my hope that you'll feel encouraged and that you'll do some Dharma practice, even reciting just a few Om Mani Padme Hum mantras this week, and dedicating it to the achievement of enlightenment by yourself and all beings. And of course, naturally, anything you can do to support the project of the Columbus KTC rebuilding. Every prayer that you say, a lot of people at this point in time, they don't have a lot of financial resources, but they can pray for us. And I have spoken to people who say we are praying for you all the time. And so this is something that we can actually accomplish. We can actually do this. And so if you pray for us, this will, all the prayers you say will manifest as that building in the future. And if you can support materially through financial contribution, this will also be existing as long as the building exists. And think about it, every person who drives by on the West Side Highway, Ohio State Route 315, they're driving north, they're driving south, they see the KTC, they see the prayer flags from the freeway, and they say, huh, interesting place, then that's merit for them. And then people who actually come in the door and learn meditation, that's amazing for them. And so all of the impact that your contribution of prayer and also finances, all of those things will bear fruit, not just while the physical building is there, but in the lives and minds of every person who comes into contact with it. And you can also have the same impact yourself by continuously wishing to be a benefit to beings. So we'll stop here for today. And I apologize again for not being able to answer questions live. I will be answering questions if there are any questions in chat on the Facebook page, the Facebook Live event for this talk. I will be doing that for the next few minutes. And then I'll be back at 2:15 on Facebook Live and YouTube Live on my page to give the rebuilding update for Columbus Karma Taksim Choling. And so it's something that we're going to start while we're on our current fundraising. So you'll see that as well. So let's take just a moment or two to sit quietly and to bring our attention to our breath coming in and going out, and make the mental aspiration to be of benefit to beings, and just sit and meditate for just a moment. Then making the aspiration that we dedicate this session of teaching to the benefit of all sentient beings. I'll recite the short prayer in English. Through the merit of this session, may all beings achieve the omniscience of Buddhahood. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Thanks, everybody. It's great to see you. And there will be another Dharma talk here next Sunday at 1 o'clock. So thanks very much and have a great week and go out there and benefit beings, okay?
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.